Welcome to the Making Margin Podcast. My name is Nick Foy. I'm the founder of Greenway Wealth Advisors. We're a firm that does financial planning and investment management. We're based in the south end of Charlotte, North Carolina. To my left is Allie Crouch.
Hi.
Allie is our director of client experience. And to my right is Jeff Emminger.
Good morning.
Good morning, or whatever time you're listening to this. Jeff is our director of financial planning. In the room with us, I've decided to continue and include Alan Sterrett.
Good times rolling on.
Because we've recorded both of these episodes on the same day. If you listen to the last episode, you'll hear Alan droning on about estate planning. He's like, oh, boring. Yeah, but it's...
but important.
It's super important. So go back and listen to that if you haven't yet. Also in the room with us is Christian Strop.co. Check him out at Strop.co. He's our sound engineer, all around good guy. Today we're talking about saving for college. And that is a topic that we typically... any of our clients who have kids will at least bring it up and talk about whether or not you want to and what's important to you about college and all that sort of thing. And there are a few sort of bullet points that we've sort of determined and figured out over the years of having these conversations. And we'll sort of bring those to you and then also talk about the best, what we think are the best saving methodologies. But the basic idea is this, is that college is expensive. Maybe not once Bernie's president. It's free for everybody.
Nothing is free.
free in air quotes.
Yeah, exactly. College is expensive and saving for it can be a really big challenge. And it ends up competing with other priorities. We'll talk through that a little bit. According to U.S. News and World Report, do they still call it and World Report or just U.S. News? I don't know. According to U.S. News, the average four-year in-state college costs about $10,000 a year. It's actually a little more than that, $10,100. And the average price, I put just for tuition in the notes, that's not right. It's tuition, fees, books, supplies, all that stuff. The average private college costs almost $37,000 a year. Public out-of-state is in between those, is about $28,000 a year. But what they point out multiple times, if you go look at U.S. News or you look at the College Board or any of these places, they point out a lot of times that people typically don't pay the sticker price. They'll pay less than the sticker price thanks to financial aid and scholarships. That's for most kids. The example that they give at U.S. News is Yale, for instance, which is an Ivy League school, advertises their sticker price is more than $55,000 a year for tuition and fees for 2019-2020 school year. But the average cost to students last year after receiving need-based grants was about $17,000. So that's a pretty big discount. I think that there's a lot of this markup of prices to make yourself look really fancy and illustrious and all these sorts of things. And ultimately, people don't tend to pay those prices. That makes hard, it makes planning hard from our perspective. But we'll talk through that a little bit. But then we think about like what the value is of college. Graduates earn a lot more over their lifetime. A Georgetown study said that on average, college graduates earn $1 million more in earnings over their lifetime than those that just have a high school diploma. So that's sort of the intro to the topic matter and what I want your thoughts on the ideas of saving for college versus saving for competing priorities. Jeff, what kind of conversations or what do you think about when sort of working with a client on those topics, saving for college versus other stuff?
I think one of my favorite bullet points of yours is it's a great gift to give someone free college or pay for their college, but it's a better gift not to knock on their door when you're in your old age and ask to move back in.
Yeah.
So I think that's, for me, like I paid for college with grants and loans and, you know, paid those off and that was okay. And I think that can be okay for a lot of people. And the more that we can help plan so that that's not a thing is great. But at the end of the day, you as the parent need to take care of yourself first, which is a conversation we have a lot.
It's like put on your own oxygen mask before helping others.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah. Allie, well, first of all, everyone in here attended a public institution. Two of us actually went to public Ivies. Alan went to the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
Go yes.
And I went to Miami University in Oxford, Ohio. That's just a made-up thing. It's just a thing. It was a guy that wrote a book, but I mention it every time that I talk about college. Allie, who paid for college for you? How'd that get paid for?
My grandparents paid for it.
Why?
Because my grandpa went to Ohio State and wanted to – he moved his whole family to Florida pretty quickly after they graduated, so none of his kids wanted to go to Ohio. So he said any grandkid that went, he would pay everything. So
how did you?
I quickly became a Buckeye.
So Jeff, school was paid for with grants and loans and scholarships and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Allie's school was paid for. What do you guys, each of you has a small child. Allie, what do you hope to be able to do for your son?
I don't want him to have loans, if at all possible. That would be ideal. But I don't think that that necessarily means paying cash for all of it. I think that grants and scholarships and working through college is also an option. But we are currently saving so that we can at least participate in paying for it.
Okay. Jeff, do you have a plan for Forrest in place yet? Have you thought about this? You and Grace worked this out?
Yeah, we're doing a similar thing. Grace, her college was paid for, so we kind of come at it from two different angles. But we're definitely planning to pay for at least some of it. And I like what one of our clients, this was a different take. They're not paying, just giving their kids cash for college, but they're paying them 10% of any scholarship money that they earn.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that's a really cool way to incentivize kids to go after the free money that's out there and have some skin in the game.
They're also putting current resources into helping them find those scholarships and giving them the tools they need to do that.
Yep.
Which I think is really cool.
And so anyway, we're saving to pay for at least some of his college and hopefully as much of it as possible as the time comes.
Yeah. I think that's what we tend to find. I mean, there's a whole wide array of experiences that people had, people that were fortunate enough to go to college and get a degree and all that sort of thing, had a whole wide array of experience as far as how that got financed. And what we tend to find is that college is a pretty good experience for most people. Like those tend to be good times. And so what we see is a lot of people who say, well, this is what happened to me. And so I'd like to do that for my kids. Jeff's experience is unique, but for his wife, it wasn't, where she says, yeah, I think we should pay. And so they're saving for that. So we'll sit down and a husband and wife, and he'll say, I had a great time at college and I paid for all of it. I worked at Papa John's and I delivered pizzas till 3 a.m. and it paid for school. And it really taught me the value of the education. And she'll say, my grandpa paid for all of it. And it was great. What a great gift that I didn't have to work through school. And I had a great time. And I was really able to focus on my education / sorority life and whatever else happens. And the reality is that college tends to be a pretty good experience for people. And so I'm sort of opened up and saying, well, what do we want to do based on the values we want to instill in our kid? And how do we want to shape our kids and how they view the educational experience? Instead of thinking like with, you know, and then create the plan based on that would sort of be my thought. A lot of our clients talk about foregoing saving for college or don't necessarily want to think of it. And they create like a launch fund instead that they save towards. And they say, well, maybe college doesn't look like it does now. Maybe it's all online, or maybe it doesn't cost what it does today. Or maybe my kid doesn't want to go to college and there's something else for him. I guess just open it. Like, are there any thoughts that you guys have on that, on how college might look different for somebody that has a young child now, or even like an early teen now? Who's going to be going within the next, say, 10, 20 years to school. You guys think about anything as we're having those?
Yeah, I mean, the financial side of it is hard for us to predict, like what the cost is actually going to be in 10, 15, 20 years. But the like what it actually looks like is changing really quickly. So you have places like the Khan Academy where you can go take free courses. You know, there are more and more community college programs that you can go straight to and then straight out to work, and you don't have to go the normal 4-year university route. So, I have no idea what it's going to look like. So you just kind of, you know, save and do what you can and, you know, just kind of play it by ear from there.
Allie, do you think colleges as institutions are going to be as relevant as they are today in 18 years when Elliot's ready to go to school?
I mean, I do think those will be relevant, but I think that the jobs such as electrician and elevator mechanic and things like that are there was, I don't remember what study it was, but we went to some thing that they talked about, how they're not being able to find apprentices because nobody's wanting to do that anymore. And so at some point between now and when Elliot is 18, that has to ramp up. Otherwise, we're not going to have elevators and we're not going to have escalators and electricians and plumbers. And so I do think that that's going to ramp up and become more of a highly sought after career. Which makes it hard with Alex and I planning for his thing. We want to put money into a 529 because of the advantages, but we also don't want it locked into that in case he does want to do something different. So we do have those conversations of how much do we put into that, because we can change it to a different kid or our grandkids at some point. So it's not gone, but we want to make sure we have the money for him.
Yeah.
For whatever he wants to do.
Yeah.
I do think that we'll reach a breaking point where there's so many people with, you know, English or history degrees that are working in coffee shops, and that we won't have people to do the things that keep our infrastructure running.
Yeah.
So I think we will see that at some point. It's just a matter of when, and that's where the big unknown is.
I mean, Alex's job is in political science, and it helps him zero his degree with degree is political science. Like, that doesn't help him at all, but he needed a 4-year degree to get any job.
Anything,
and so it's like mine, however, was specifically for my job, and I needed to go and I needed to do that. But a lot of those psychology and history, and my brother's history major, and he's a fighter pilot in the Air Force.
Yeah. I do think that, to your point, Allie, like the idea of trades that where you use your hands and you're doing something that can't be replaced by a machine, like the value of those you could imagine increasing over time. And then, like, who's creating the machines and who's creating the software for the machines? And those are things that, and not that machines are going to totally take over necessarily, but that there are more and more jobs that have the potential to be done by computer. And that we've already obviously seen that in our lifetime and probably will continue to. And so as computers continue to be able to do things better than humans can, where are those places that people can fit in and earn a good living, without necessarily having to get the art history degree or whatever else that it is, but be thinking really strategically about that.
Another point kind of along those lines, like, we're going to really encourage Forrest to go the community college route for the first couple of years, because it was my experience, and I know it's a lot of people's experience, that you just don't know what you want to do, and that might change 4 times in the first 2 years. So,
and gen eds are the same no matter where you go.
Yeah, so why spend the extra money? So that's something that we'll definitely be looking towards and encouraging. But at the end of the day, it's going to be his decision.
Yeah, I think that's so interesting too, because when you're a junior and you're a senior in high school, and if you're in like a competitive environment, it's like, oh, like, no, I got to have the sweatshirt with the name on it with the school. That's like we'd have different names for the junior college near us, and like if the kids that went there, there was something else. And so, like changing the dynamic of that and saying, no, like, I actually have something planned, and like transferring for me, it was for kids that went to the 2-year school so they could transfer to Berkeley and then they get a degree from Berkeley. You know, that's a pretty good deal, but they might not be able to get into Berkeley right away, and that's okay. But we put so much pressure on high schoolers at that point to say, no, you got to go to the 4 years or whatever.
Well, and at 18, you need to actually 17, you need to know what you want to do for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Good luck with that. I don't even know what I want for lunch today. Just kidding. I know exactly what I want for lunch today. All right. So let's talk about nitty gritty. What are the vehicles that we use to save for college? Allie mentioned 529 plans. So talk with me, both of you, a little bit about how we utilize those most effectively, advantages, disadvantages, all that sort of thing.
The big advantage is the tax-free growth. So what you put in there, as long as you use it for education, it grows tax-free. So the longer you have to save in it, typically the better, and the more advantageous the 529 is. So that's kind of, especially people with really young children, that's a great place to start.
And you can use it K-12 in college. Can you use it for higher education?
Higher education? You sound like British when you said
sorry.
That. Yeah, you can. Yeah, you can use it all the way through grad school. So we've got some clients who thought about doing grad school, and we talked about a 529 plan saving for them even as adults. Like Jeff mentioned, yeah, the long-term benefit can be really significant. And if you're uber wealthy, one thing we talk about with our clients is, if you're uber wealthy, then you just max out and put as much as you can in a 529 plan, because it can pass down through the generations. So The max is somewhere north of $500,000 that you could put into a 529 plan. It's out of your estate. It grows tax-free. And at some point, someone might be able to use that for school. So that's sort of a planning tool and technique that sort of amplifies the value of a 529. But I do think that there's the other side that then you all have this, then you have all this money that's stuck that can only be used for higher education. Otherwise, you're going to pay tax and penalty on it.
For education in general.
For education in general. And that Allie always has to remind me of that because it's a relatively new thing that you can use a 529 for K-12. And if you go to a private school, you can take money out of the 529. But you sort of miss out on the big benefit if your kid's six and you're going to take it out when they're seven. Then there's not necessarily a ton of tax-free growth that you can accumulate. So, sure. So what do we do for people that say, yeah, I don't want all the money locked into just a 529 plan. I want more flexibility with it.
The biggest thing we do is just encourage them to save into a non-retirement, just a taxable account. And they can, we like to use Betterment for that because we can put a name on it and they can, on the app, you can even put a little picture of your kid on there so you don't take money from their education fund.
Or launch fund, whatever you call it.
Yeah, whatever you call it. So that with it brings flexibility because you don't have to just use it for education. You do have potential taxes, capital gains, things like that. But you're really freed up. So it could be used for a down payment on a house or
a car
or, you know, whatever, if they don't use it for education. So.
Yeah,
the flexibility is the benefit.
Yeah, so you increase your flexibility. You potentially reduce what the tax advantages are, but the money could be used for anything, and you're not necessarily penalized on it.
We have a lot of clients that do both.
Yeah.
Some in 529, some in taxable.
Right. And so then the way I think about it is the 529 to be sort of the more aggressive investment asset classes. They'll keep in the 529 because the growth there is tax-free. And then as we get more conservative, as a kid goes to, you know, starts getting closer to college, we'll do that outside of the 529. That's one of the things is that 18 years, if you start, even when nobody starts right when their kid's born, or very few people do, is not a lot of time to save for something that grows. Like the cost of college historically has doubled, like the rate of increase doubles that of inflation. So inflation's like 2.5% a year, say right now, and college costs have increased at 5% a year. So it's really hard to come up with a portfolio that can sort of safely outperform 5% a year without taking on a ton of risk. And 18 years is not a long time horizon. So as we get closer to college age and we bring that portfolio and make it more conservative so that we can have more confidence that the money's actually going to be there, suddenly we're not necessarily expecting performance over and above what the increase in the cost of college is. And that can be really hard. Some states have alternatives to that where they do like a prepaid tuition plan. But the problem is then you're stuck. You know, you don't know when you pay tuition based on current day. And then when your kid goes to school there, they don't necessarily have to pay anymore. But if they decide to go outside of state, you get the money back without any interest. So I don't know. That's a great deal. We all need Georgia. Georgia has the Hope Scholarship. You guys know the Hope Scholarship?
No.
So if you're a Georgia resident, and you can go tuition free to any public in-state university, which that's a pretty good deal. Yeah. And some people set up a scholarship fund. It's just a big endowment now. And that's a great deal, assuming that you can qualify. I think that basically covers it. So the idea
Go ahead. So talk about if a grandparent wants to start a 529, like how does that work? And is that a good option?
Oh, yeah.
Should it be in their name? Like all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. That was the other thing. Thanks for bringing that up. I want to cover states. So 529 plans are all state specific. North Carolina has a pretty good one. We've started pushing people to Utah, which I think has a better one as far as costs go. So you're going to pay administrative costs to the state. And you want those to be as low as possible. And then there are costs for the underlying investments that you actually choose within the state plans. And if you go to savingforcollege.com, you can find sort of a ranking of the costs of all the different state 529 plans. North Carolina also used to have a state tax benefit for putting money into a 529 plan. And that went away with the when they redid the whole, they made a flat tax and they did away with a bunch of deductions and that sort of thing. And one of those was the state tax deduction. So there's not necessarily like a benefit for having a North Carolina 529 plan anymore. So anyway, choosing what state you're going to go to, making sure that your costs are really low within that plan because they just erode the value of that potential earning if you're spending too much on the administrative side and on the investment side. And then Allie mentioned ownership. So there comes a time. So a lot of grandparents want to open 529 plans and be the owner and have their grandkids as the beneficiary or grandkid, or the multiple 529s with grandkids. And that can be a good thing up until a certain point. And basically this has to do with the rules around federal student aid, FAFSA. I never know how to say it. But when a kid is getting ready to go to school and they apply at FAFSA and they just see if they have any federal student aid that's available to them, depending on who the owner is, that can change sort of the dynamic of how much student aid that they're eligible to receive. So you got to time this right. And, there's all sorts of details out there on the interwebs, and we'll post in our liner notes some details about sort of how to do this. But we'll get people that come and say, oh, yeah, grandma and grandpa have this. And that's great up to a certain point. And so we'll send you those details.
We'll put them in the show notes.
In the show notes. Did I say liner notes?
Yes, you did.
In the show notes. Yeah.
Let me also add a comment here, and it piggybacks on the previous episode. But you guys are great because a lot of the conversations that you're having with your clients, when we sit down with them, they're bringing that to the table. So if we're contemplating what would happen, what would it look like if mom and dad weren't around to see their kids through college? Often we're setting up a trust so that the funds have somewhere to go.
Mm-hmm.
And we can mimic a lot of your counsel, a lot of your direction in that trust. So a couple of the notes or thoughts that you raised, it's an incentivized trust, let's call it. We can stipulate that some of the distributions are tied to, you know, maybe it's some of their own efforts. So it's not just a free gift, let's call it. Mm-hmm. The definition of education, or what they are encouraged to, I guess, why the trust exists. It can be broader than just, you know, too laser focused.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very helpful when they come in already having those thoughts in mind.
Yeah.
And it looks at it from a different angle.
Yeah. And that's part of a big part of. That's a great point. And part of what we're trying to answer is, this is the plan. What if this doesn't work out like you'd hoped? And I think having something like that in place, or at least knowing that it exists, is important. I think, too, the idea, you know, that Jeff talked about at the outset, is if you're saving well enough for yourself first, and we sort of have that in place, the life insurance piece can be a really big deal for this, too. Where we say, okay, you're saving money, but what if this doesn't work out? And having a term policy of some sort that says that, okay, I'm financially independent and I'm to the point where I don't necessarily need to work if I don't want to. But there's life insurance there so that if things don't work out like I had hoped they would, that's one of the things we look at, using a tool like that to help pay for the college expense. And I think then you're looking at adding the beneficiaries, whatever trust or specific sort of document that's created there.
Yeah, and I think as your clients too, as you're meeting with them and they're thinking through planning ahead, one of the topics that surfaces in our meetings is the idea around a legacy statement. So just what sort of behavior or pursuits would mom and dad want to encourage their children to, you know, sort of aspire to, mm-hmm. or, reach for their dreams? And so when you've got that in place, and then you can communicate that and share that with the family and the decision makers that you appoint who are going to be behind to raise your children and kind of see them through college. I think that's a key piece of one's financial plan.
Yeah.
And certainly an estate plan.
My wife's grandfather did that. He died in 2015, maybe. And before that, he had put this letter together like that. And it became so valuable for him to be able to read. And just a way of passing on your values and making sure it's in writing, I think, is huge. That's good. Cool. All right. So, summarize, take care of yourself first. And how much is that? Well, I don't know how much that is to take care of yourself, but it's something you got to make sure you figure out. Once you've done that, and then thinking about with the extra, putting it towards college, knowing that there are other ways to pay for college other than just your own savings, that, as we mentioned, grants, scholarship loans, all that sort of thing can pay for college. And your kid is going to be fine. They're going to have a fine experience because people love going to college.
Or trade school.
Or trade school, yeah, or whatever it is that they decide to do. So take care of yourself first, and then the tools that we talked about, the 529, and then outside savings, and putting those together and coming up with a number that you think will estimate sort of how much this higher education is going to cost, I think are great things. Anything else?
I don't think so.
Thanks for being – Alan, thanks for being here for this.
Hey, it was great. Thank you guys for having me.
Alan Starrett, StarrettLawFirm.com. and Christian Stropko, strop.co. Thanks very much. We'll see you next time.